listen, listen, listen. God is speaking to us.
Kairos Milwaukee United Church of Christ presents People from Away, the sermon by the Reverend Gene Randall Bodman, presented on Sunday, October 1st, 2017.
Well, as we embark on this exploration into becoming an immigrant-welcoming church, I've been thinking a lot about places of origin and what it means to call a place home. The year that David and I got engaged, I spent the week between Christmas and New Year's Eve visiting with his family in his hometown in Downeast, Maine. Now, for those of you unfamiliar with the great state of Maine, only part of it is technically Downeast, the part where the land curves out to the sea and where sailors would sail downwind to the east. Machias is the county seat. The downtown has a stately courthouse, huge post office, a picturesque New England church, tall and white with a tall steeple. And there's a branch of the University of Maine on a hill overlooking the town, and about 2,500 people. Now, you must understand that I had grown up in a suburb of Philadelphia, and we often went downtown because my dad's office was downtown, right across the street from the Liberty Bell. My mother had grown up in New York City, and we visited family there often too. So to me, Philadelphia seemed like a smallish, medium-sized town. Imagine my surprise upon arriving in Machias for the first time, which David had described as a town, you know, a big-sized town. We went to a New Year's Eve party at David's sister's home, where word had gotten out that we were engaged, and it was quite a buzz that David was marrying someone from away. By which I mean to say, they were buzzing, but no one was speaking to me directly. I stood awkwardly, trying not to drink my champagne too fast, until finally a friend of David's sister took pity on me. And of course, she asked the natural question, "So, where are your people from?" Where are your people from? I had never heard this question. But I was really very grateful that the ice had been broken, so I said, maybe a bit too enthusiastically, "Philadelphia!" "Ah," she said. Her voice filled with the warmth of concern for someone who has sustained some kind of major injury. "Ah, down south." In Downeast Maine, if you are from anywhere but right where you are standing, you are from away. And if you are from anywhere below the Kittery Bridge, which takes you over the Piscataqua River and into New Hampshire, you are most clearly, sadly, tragically from down south. I've thought a lot about that very brief conversation over the years. Obviously, it stuck with me, partly because David and I met in New York City. And there are certainly natives of New York who've never lived anywhere else. And there is absolutely no one more provincial than a certain kind of dyed-in-the-wool New Yorker. They don't actually really believe that other places exist. It's all just New York. But New York is also filled with people from every part of the country and the world. People there on purpose to remake and reinvent themselves. As a suburbanite, with parents who each came from a different place, who met in college and followed jobs to the place where they raised us, I don't have a deep, generations-long sense of connection to place. That sense of connection that most of the people in Machias share. And I was quite intrigued by it. I felt shut out by it, but I was intrigued. Fast forward through seminary and into graduate school in Virginia. We had just moved to the Shenandoah Valley so that David could serve his first parish. It's a beautiful place, tucked between the Blue Ridge Mountains and Massanutten Peak. we quickly learned that it was very important to every member of the congregation that both David and I know not only where they lived and whether they were still farming, but also where their home place was. If they were not the ones who had inherited the farm, where had they grown up? And then, too, where was the home place of their parents? There were several families, the Berners, the Sowers, the Hensleys, and the Meyerhoffers, each entwined for generations back. They belonged to that place. Now, you know that that little church tucked away in that tiny little dairy farming town in the south must have been at a deep need for a preacher to have called someone from up north. And not just up north, but about as far north as you can get without crossing over into Canada. At one time or another during our 5 years that we lived there, every older man in the congregation sidled up to us, not while on church grounds, of course, but sidled up to us and said with a twinkle in their eye, "You know, I was 16, I was 18, I was 50, before I knew that damn Yankee was two words." Each one assumed that we had never heard this joke before, or maybe they just thought it was too doggone good. They didn't care how many times we'd heard it. As you can imagine, I felt a little out of place. One night, while David was at a meeting over at the church, a neighbor knocked on the door. And the moment I answered, she began ranting. Her southern accent was so thick, and she was so upset that I understood only about 2 out of every 5 words. And finally, she said huffily, "Well, I'm not from here. I don't know how these things are done here." She was talking about the streetlights, I think. Seizing on a point of commonality, I said, "Oh, I'm not from here either. Where are you from?" And she said, "Grottoes." Grottoes, Virginia, is a town 4 miles down the road from where we were standing. It was 4 miles away, and yet she experienced herself as being away from her home place, in alien territory where she was not exactly sure how things were supposed to be done. The people of McGackiesville, Virginia, and the people of Machias in Maine have this in common. They love the place that they are from. And they believe that that place shapes who they are, and that to be from away means to be foreign. When you label yourself from a place, you give away information about yourself. To the friend in Machias who asked where my people were from, the fact that I was from down south and from a city gave her whole volumes of information that I was unaware of giving to her, and I'm not sure she was reading them correctly. My experiences were mildly dislocating, and nothing like the experiences of people who are forced by war or loss, by economic need, or even people driven by curiosity and adventurousness to go into an entirely new country where language, culture, religion, food, where everything is new and unfamiliar. The biblical tradition that we inherit has a lot to say about this idea of being a stranger in the land, of being foreign and vulnerable, and perhaps unwelcome. Beginning with the story of Adam and Eve. Adam and Eve were safe and secure only briefly in their mythical Eden before being evicted into that primal human experience of being far away from home and of seeking belonging. Abraham made himself a stranger in a new land by following God's command to get up and go. Once settled and prospering, Abraham's people ended up strangers again when famine hit the land, and they had to escape to Egypt. There they settled in, and they flourished, and they began to find home, only to have the king think, "There's too many of them." Pharaoh got very nervous about these interlopers who were becoming too powerful and too numerous in the land, and he forced them out into the wilderness. And it is there in the wilderness, encamped at Sinai, that Moses delivers God's instructions on how to be a holy people. The alien who resides with you shall be to you as the citizen among you. You shall love the alien as yourself, for you were aliens in the land. I am the Lord your God. The law given to the people is very clear. You will know that you are following in God's way by the way you treat three categories of people: widows, orphans, and strangers, the vulnerable among you. We long as human beings for connection and belonging. We find our identity in family, in clan, in place, sometimes in political party. We group ourselves with people like us, people that make us feel at home. And into this practice, the biblical tradition speaks, saying, "You are my people, holy to me, blessed, but blessed to be a blessing to the whole earth, not just for yourselves. So love the stranger among you." This doesn't mean just speak kindly to them or be courteous to them. It very specifically means provide for them or make it possible for them to provide for themselves. Share the abundance of the land with them. Now, this is from later in Leviticus 19. "Now, when you reap the harvest of your land, you shall not reap to the very corners of your field, nor shall you gather the gleanings of your harvest, nor shall you glean your vineyard, nor shall you gather the fallen fruit of your vineyard. You shall leave them for the needy and for the stranger. I am the Lord your God." And Jesus, our rabbi, continues this teaching. He says, "You are my very body on earth. You are the site of the inbreaking of God's kingdom on earth. I am calling each one of you and all of you together, and this is how to do it. Feed the hungry, clothe the naked, welcome the stranger, visit the sick and the imprisoned." As we explore our own histories of immigration or coming here as indentured people or enslaved people or starting here as indigenous people, for that may be part of the history of all of us, let's keep the challenge and comfort of these scriptural voices in our hearts and minds. They challenge us to consider how wide our welcome should be, how exclusively we find our identity. They comfort us with the reminder that when we were strangers, God was calling others to welcome us. And we are reminded that we are not alone. We belong to Christ, and we belong to each other. Amen.